when you can take your focus off yourself and place it on helping others solve and overcome their challenges and their problems, when you can move off of yourself and make it about moving another person closer toward happiness, people like feel that. Good about you. They feel great about you. They want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to be in relationship with you. They want to do business with you, but they want to tell the world about you.
For over 30 years, Bob Berg has been successfully showing entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals how to communicate their value and accelerate their business growth. Although for years he was best known for his sales classic, Endless Referrals, it's his business parable, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, that has created a worldwide movement. While part of a four-book series, The Go-Giver itself has sold more than 1 million copies and been translated into 30 languages. It was rated number 10 on Inc. magazine's list of the most motivational books ever written, and was on HubSpot's 20 most highly rated sales books of all time. Bob is founder of the Go-Giver Success Alliance, an online mentorship community for successful entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals, and he publishes the very popular Daily Impact email. He is an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He is also an unapologetic animal fanatic and served on the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption and Clinic in his town of Jupiter, Florida. You're listening to Success in Mind, the show for high-performing leaders, changemakers, and entrepreneurs ready to take your life and business to the next level. If you're ready for whole-life success, keep listening. Are you ready to unleash your voice to the world? Do you have a story to share, but you're not sure where to start? Join me for the 5-day Launch Your Podcast Challenge. This is an extensive 5-day journey where you will learn everything you need to know to launch your own podcast successfully, from crafting captivating content to mastering the technical side of recording, editing, and publishing. We've got you covered. Don't miss this opportunity to turn your passion into a powerful podcast. Sign up now and let's kickstart your podcasting journey together. All the information is in the show notes. Hi, Bob. Welcome to Success in Mind. Thank you for joining me today.
Hello, Terry. My pleasure and honor.
I have to tell you, I've really been looking forward to this interview. I first read The Go-Giver, I think in 2018, and it's been a book that I have read several times since, wow. And I recommend it and I gift it to many of my clients. Mm. So it's been a big part of my life since 2018.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me to know that. Thank you.
Thank you. What was the inspiration behind The Go-Giver?
Well, many, many years ago, back in the early to mid 90s, I had a book out called Endless Referrals, and the subtitle was Network Your Everyday Contacts into Sales. So it was really written for entrepreneurs and salespeople who, you know, they knew they had a great product, a great service. They knew it brought lots of value to those they served, but they didn't necessarily feel comfortable going out into their local communities and building the kinds of relationships where people would want to do business with them directly and or refer them to others. So Endless Referrals was a system, you know, a process for doing so. The premise was that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. So, you know, it was a how-to book, and it was fortunately very successful. But, you know, I always loved reading business parables. I have, since I've been in sales, have loved reading them. I think we all know that stories, they connect with people on a deeper level and more of a heart-to-heart level. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could, you know, take that basic idea in Endless Referrals, but put it in a story form? So, you know, over the next, 10 years or so, nothing really happened with it. But I kind of had some ideas in my head and had a very rough idea of a storyline, but nothing at all developed. But I got to meet John David Mann, my eventual co-author, because he was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I was writing for, doing a monthly column. And even back then, I mean, John had a great reputation in his niche as being a brilliant, brilliant writer and storyteller. And he was such a great guy and fantastic editor. And I just asked him if he would, you know, take a look at this idea, what he thought of it, and so forth. So, You know, he was even, you know, he was busy at the time, but because of the relationship we'd built, when he and his, well, now wife, but then fiance Anna, they were down visiting her mom on the other side of Florida. They took a 4-hour drive over one afternoon. We had about a 3-hour dinner, the three of us, and just talked about the book and what it would be about and what we'd expect to have happen and so forth. And a few weeks later, he calls, he said, you know, Anna and I have talked it over. We think this is a good idea. Let's do this. So we, you know, we wrote the story. And when I say we, he gets the credit. He, I mean, this guy, great, an amazing storyteller. And entrepreneur, but you know, the big thing was it didn't take long to actually write the book. What took longer was the year and 24 rejections from New York publishing houses along the way before we finally found our publishing partner, who has been absolutely wonderful.
I'm curious, when you were going through that year and getting all of those rejections, how did you keep going through that?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't think rejections are ever fun, but they're part of life and they're part of success. And, you know, what we all want to be able to do is learn from them and grow with them. And, so we, you know, we just said, hey, you know, let's look at these and decide, first of all, you know, which are the ones that are in our control to do something with and which aren't. So when someone, when a publisher said, well, we're just not interested in doing business parables. Okay. That, you know, that's fine. That's just not there. That wasn't the right one. But if they said, you know, we liked it, we didn't feel it had enough of this or that. Well, now we said, okay, let's talk about this. And we got together and we kind of got together with our brain trust and we'd throw around ideas and, okay, can we learn from this? Can we do something different with it? And then we would hear something like, and one of the big things was that, you know, we just didn't do a good enough job of sharing sharing with them, communicating our platform. Now, when a publisher says platform, they mean, how many people do you know are going to buy the book? Because these are people who not, right? And so I put together a whole new video that, you know, to do a better job with it. They were right. And so, you know, so it was a matter of really just not being defensive about it, not letting our egos get in the way, and looking at where and how we could learn and progressing from there.
Is The Go-Giver based on any sort of a true story or any of the characters real people?
Yeah. So the story itself is totally a work of fiction, but it includes a whole bunch of things that actually happened that we used in the story. The characters, one of them, the Pindar, was loosely based on Toronto, Canada's Bob Proctor, who you may be familiar with. Yeah, he was just a great guy, wonderful guy, very prosperity minded, just a great guy, and just wanted to see people do well. And so we pictured Bob and his attitude, and we pictured him and I'm saying gray hair, like I don't have gray hair, but you know, the shock gray hair and he had that great voice. And so we kind of pictured him. Then, the realtor in the story, Deborah, was a compilation of two, a combination of two, people. One was actually a very, very successful realtor. The other was another very, very successful businesswoman in another field. And so then you had people like Joe, who was totally made up. He was just the average Joe or Josephine. You know, we've all been Joe, right? Mm-hmm. Or we've all been Josephine. It's, you know, we're starting, we have a good, you know, we're going to work hard and we're after it and we're going, but our focus is kind of in the wrong place, right? And we need that mentorship to kind of steer us correctly. So it was sort of like that.
Great. What does it mean to be a go-giver?
Yeah, you know, really, it's simply understanding that shifting your focus. And I think, you know, Terry, this is really where it all begins, right? It's shifting your focus from getting to giving. Now, when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding that doing so is not only a more fulfilling way of conducting business, it's a way as well. But not for some, you know, way out there, woo-woo, magical, mystical type of reasons. Oh, just give and do good things. No, nothing that would be magical thinking. And that's not what this is, you know. No, it's very much based on human nature. When you're that person who can move your focus off of yourself and place it on serving others, discovering their needs, their wants, their desires. When you can take your focus off yourself and place it on helping others solve and overcome their challenges and their problems, when you can move off of yourself and make it about moving another person closer toward happiness, people like feel that. Good about you. They feel great about you. They want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you. They right. want to be in relationship with you. They want to do business with you, but they want to tell the world about you, be your personal walking ambassador, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, put it to Joe.
I love that. Can a go-giver ever give too much? Like, is there, can someone be a go-giver and also not be taken advantage of at the same time?
Right. So, that's a great question. So let's look at that on a couple of levels. And the first thing is just to assure people that there is absolutely nothing about being a go-giver that is congruent with being a doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. So, so the first thing when you say, can you give too much? No, you can give inappropriately. You can give, first of all, in ways that other people don't appreciate it because it's not what they find to be of value, right? Value is very subjective, right? Value is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. So what we find to be of value might not be what another person does. So when we give only from our own point of view, right, then we're probably not. We think we're giving value, but we're really not. Okay. Now, when we say about being taken advantage of, if someone finds themselves in a pattern, Terry, I'm not saying, every so often it's going to happen. Life is life. Unless you never leave the home, you're going to get taken advantage of at some time in your life, but and if you don't leave the home, you're not going to accomplish anything anyway. Well, I guess you could now with the internet, but usually not. Okay. But I'm talking about a pattern of being taken advantage of. If one finds themselves in that place, it's not because they're a nice person. It's not because they're a giver. It's because they're doing things in a certain way that creates the environment for them to be taken advantage of. Okay. And what they need to do is kind of find out why that is. And there's always an emotional payoff to doing that, okay? To being a professional victim, a professional being taken advantage of. Now, again, it's unconscious. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, hey, I wonder who I can find to take advantage of me today. But no, it's unconscious. And it's either because you don't feel worthy of not being taken advantage of, or with some people, it's an attention getter. Oh, they're such good people, but they're always taking it being the poor part, right? Or it may be that excuse for not being successful. I would be successful, but I'm always being giving away, myself away and being taken advantage of, right? Or, so again, there's always some kind of payoff, but it's unconscious, okay? And there's no judgment here. It's just, we all have our own set of beliefs. Most of them are unconscious, and we don't know why a lot of the times we do those things that can sabotage our own success, through our thought processes and behaviors. So if someone, is listening to this saying, yeah, well, that's me. I'm always being, well, first, congratulations for recognizing it. Being conscious of it is the first step to being able to overcome it. And now you get to start questioning your premises. Why does this happen? Why am I always the one involved in every one of these situations? Who can I talk to, a counselor or someone who can kind of work with me on this? Right? So, typically as a go-giver, you're going to attract, first of all, you're going to attract more people into your life who are other go-givers. But even so, because of the kind of, and I don't mean to get too meta here, but because of the vibration you're living on, the creative plane, you're going to be able to really sense out those people.
Right.
And by the way, when there are people who maybe don't want to take advantage of you in a negative way, but it's just the way they are. They're go takers. They're the kind of people who are going to try to get the most out of you from the least and keep pushing the boundaries. You can still be a go giver. Your goal is to bring value to them. That's first of all, it's the only reason they're going to do business with you like anybody else, because they believe they're going to benefit from it. But you can also very politely, tactfully, respectfully set your boundaries and absolutely respect your boundaries.
Yeah.
It's just doing so in a tactful, diplomatic way.
Do you have some advice for how we can set those boundaries or how to say no to someone in a way that is respectful and maintains a relationship.
So let's do this on a couple of levels. First, let's do a generic how to say no to people.
Okay.
And then let's bring it back to a business situation where someone is maybe trying to get you to do more than what was agreed to, and you don't feel it's, and I'm not talking about just, you know, adding extra value because it's something you want to do and feel good about. I'm talking about someone kind of really pushing the boundaries. Okay. So, but let's first do just a generic how to say no, because the more successful you get, the more people want you to do things. And it's great to be asked. It's wonderful. People want you to, it's an honor, but we really don't have the time to do everything for everyone without sacrificing, first our own success, but also the work we can do for the people we're supposed to be serving.
Right.
Right. So you've got to say no more than you say yes, but again, it's how you do it. So let's say, for example, somebody asks you to serve on a committee. I don't know what kind of committee it is. It could be a school committee, town committee, business committee, whatever it is. You don't want to. It's not that you wouldn't want it. You don't feel it's the right thing to do based on, what you need to be doing. So, there's different ways people have taught how to say no. And let's go over a couple of the ones first that I don't think are productive. So the first one is you hear people say things like, well, just remember, no is a complete sentence. Well, it literally is. I mean, no is a complete sentence, but it's not a productive one because first it's rude. It's impolite. I mean, when someone asks you to serve on a committee, you say no. I mean, is that really a complete sentence? Now, what they're saying is understand that you can say no. Of course, I agree with that. But no is a complete sentence. Nah. If you do that too, remember, you're going to turn that person off because it's impolite. They're probably not going to ask you to ever do anything else. And you may want to keep that relationship. You just don't want to do that particular thing. Plus, saying no like that is incongruent with your value system of treating people with kindness and respect. So, I don't think that's the best way. Another way people say is, well, just kind of make up a little excuse, like I don't have time. Well, there's a couple of challenges with that. First, it's not that you don't have the time. It's that you don't place a high enough value on doing that thing as you do on not doing that thing. That's okay. But if you say, I don't have time, well, this person probably hears that quite a bit. And when they're able to persuasively communicate why time will not be an issue, now you're stuck. You've either got to say, well, actually, I was kind of just fibbing. I really have the time. I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to tell you that. When they're gonna have a little bit of a lack of respect for you doing that. You're not gonna feel good about yourself. Mm-hmm. Or you've got to, in order to save face, you've got to now accept the invite, which you really don't want to do.
Right.
And remember too, when you say you don't have time, the person says, "Oh, it's okay. Well, we're gonna be doing it again 6 months from now. So I'll just come back to you then." Well, now you can just kick the can down the road. So I don't believe either of those are the best way to do it. Here's an easy way. Here's a very easy way to say no, to do it respectfully and tactfully while honoring your own boundaries. They ask you to serve on the committee. You simply say, "Thank you so much. While it's not something I'd like to do, please know how honored I am to be asked." That's it. Okay.
Wow.
Depending on your own style, you can change the language a little bit. It might be, "Oh, thank you so much for asking. While, it's not something I choose to take on, I do appreciate you asking." However you want to do it. But the principle is what you've done is you've thanked them, right? Mm-hmm. You've honored them. You've let them know how much you appreciate that. And at the same time, you said no in such a way that you let them know the answer is no. What you didn't do is you didn't make an excuse for them to grab onto, an objection for them to, to answer. Now, there are rare times where, based on the relationship you have with that person and what they're asking you to do, that you do need to let them know why. When I'm asked to read a manuscript for a book and put an endorsement quote, at this point don't mean to say this in a braggy way, but I just get a lot of requests every week, and I just can't take those on. So I let the person know, you know, thank you so much. You know, it's such an honor to be asked. Unfortunately, you know, because I'm asked several times a week, I'm not able to take any on, or I would be investing 20 hours a week reading great manuscripts instead of getting my work done. You know,
right.
So this times, yeah, you kind of have to, but most of the time you really don't. Most of the time it's just simply, thank you. While it's not something I'd like to do, please know how honored or how grateful I am to be asked. And that's pretty much it. And that's a way to say no. Now, let's go back to the business aspect where, let's say you are doing some work for someone who's hired you to do this work, and they're asking you to do more and more, and it's at the point now where it's inappropriate for them to be asking. It's not something you should be doing, you know, for the same amount of money. Now, what you can say to that person is, oh, thank you so much for asking. I don't believe this is part of what we agreed to. If you would like to have me do this, we can certainly discuss it. It would be an extra fee. Is that something you'd like to discuss? Boom. And that's it. Now, this assumes you even want to do that. Otherwise, you would just say, oh, thank you so much. I appreciate your asking. I don't believe this is something that is in our agreement. Okay. Now, this is also a couple things here, which are very important. One is, people forget things sometimes. So this is why agreements, written agreements, are so important. It's not that you don't trust the person. It's that, you know, memories fade. And sometimes, you know, you agree to something and there's a little bit of a differentiation between what the two of you remember agreeing to, right?
Right.
So when you have it, you know, you can then say, would you like to look at the agreement and we can see where we mention it? So again, if you notice the way I'm doing it, never puts that person on the defensive. Never causes them to feel bad about themselves or paints them into a corner. It's always polite, it's kind, it's tactful, and respects your boundaries.
That's great. I'm definitely going to use that. I appreciate that. Excellent advice. Could you give us a sort of an overview of the five laws that you and John talk about in the book?
Yeah. So the five laws are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. The first one, the law of value, is all about the experience that you provide this person from the first contact, whether it's inbound, outbound, over the computer, whether it's at you met somewhere local, whatever it happens to be. From the minute you meet that person, through the relationship building process, the follow-up, the follow-through, the sales process, the referral process, how do you make that person feel at every single touch point, right? So that by the time they buy from you, aside from just the product or service, which intrinsically, of course, has to give more in use value than what they're paying, otherwise they would not buy it.
Right.
It's more than that. It's the all-around experience that you're providing them. It really comes down to how do you make them feel about themselves,
right?
And that's really law number one. There should always be, you know, of course, two profits in every exchange. The buyer and the seller both profit because both of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. It would be like the accountant who you hire to do your taxes, and she charges you, let's say, $1,000. But she, and that's her price, right? Her fee, her price. But the value she provides, well, she saves you $5,000 in taxes. She saves you countless hours of time. She provides you and your family with the security and the peace of mind of knowing it was done correctly. She gave you well over $5,000 in value in exchange for a $1,000 price or fee. So you come away feeling great about it, right? And she made a healthy profit as well, because to her, it was worth it to her to exchange her time, her energy, her knowledge, right, for that $1,000. So again, both parties come away better off. Law number two is the law of compensation. And this says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one is all about the value you provide, right? Law number two is all about how many lives do you impact with that value,
right?
You know, Nicole Martin, the mentor in that part of the story, told Joe, the protege, law of value is all about your potential income, right? Mm-hmm. But law of compensation is your actual income, right? And so we could say exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation. Law number three is the law of influence. Now, this one says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Again, not in a doormatty way or a martyrish way. It's simply understanding, as you and I talked about earlier, and as Joe learned from several of the mentors, right, the golden rule of business, that all things being equal, people will do business with, refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Well, here's the thing. There's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by genuinely moving from that I focus or me focus to that other focus. Looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, make your win all about the other person's win.
Right.
Law number four, the law of authenticity, said the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. So in this part of the story, Deborah Davenport, and she was the one, she was the realtor in the story that she was a combination of two different people. She said that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are indeed all very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. They feel safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they're getting, right? And, you know, this kind of consistency is an element of human, this desire, this craving for consistency in those we trust, that's baked into our human nature, right? In order to develop trust and maintain trust, they've got to know who they're getting. Now, you know, I think one thing about authenticity, though, which I've noticed over the last 10, 15 years since social media has really become a thing, is that authenticity's meaning has kind of been hijacked a little. It's almost as though, you know, to be authentic means you have no boundaries. Just say or do whatever you want, use whatever language, do just insult people, you know, whatever, because, well, you're authentic, so that's okay. And I respectfully disagree with that. You know, that would be like the guy who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot, and if I was to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. And hogwash. That's, you know, that simply means that person has an authentic problem.
Right.
That he needs to authentically work on in order to become a better, higher, more effective, authentic version of himself. So, yeah, we never want to use authenticity as a way of not growing, right? And or being rude, right?
Yeah.
We want to use it as a way of bettering ourselves and stepping into our highest authentic nature. I define authenticity very simply. It's acting congruently with your values. And I think if you do that, you're being authentic. And then our last law is the law of receptivity. And the law of receptivity, Terry, says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. What does this mean? Well, really nothing more than understanding that, yeah, you breathe out, you also have to breathe in. Right? You breathe out carbon dioxide, you breathe in oxygen. It's not one or the other, right? You've got to do both in order to survive, in order to thrive. And so giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. Giving and receiving are two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. The challenge is that the world around us gives us so many negative, absolutely anti-prosperity messages, whether it's about abundance, whether it's about money, whether it's about business, my goodness. And so, you know, people get this, again, it's unconscious. It's from the time they're little kids, they're hearing all these negative messages about money. And that's, you know, and that gets in their head at the same time. They're taught, you know, what do you see on TV and in the movies? The honest people are poor, but and kind, and the rich people are ruthless and terrible and greedy. And, you know, so you, and that gets into people's heads when they get that, right? But then they're taught, let's say, by their parents to be honest and trustworthy and good. And, but so now there's a conflict here. because they see themselves now in a position they're adding great value to those around them, and they're starting the process of earning a really good living. But now that unconscious comes in, well, wait a second. If I'm making a lot of money, what does that say about me? Am I being dishonest? You know, if I hurt people, what are others going to think of me? Are they going to think I've changed? You know, and now there's that conflict. And we know when it comes to the unconscious versus the conscious is going to win every single time. So, you know, I think an important thing to do is study prosperity. You know, there's people like Randy Gage and David Nagel and Sharon Lecter and Ellen Rogan and Ken Honda and, you know, again, the late Bob Proctor, people who've written and blogged and have videos and they do teachings, and study this stuff, study the prosperity, because, you know, the garbage, the anti-prosperity garbage comes in all the time from everywhere. Okay. We get enough of that naturally. So we've got to actually go out of our way to seek out that good pro-prosperity information and get that into our heads and get that into our hearts.
Excellent. I have a couple quick rapid fire questions for you, if you'll indulge me in them.
Sure, I will do my best.
What is your favorite book?
Oh, gosh, favorite book of all time. That would be very difficult because there are books in different genres that have just helped me immeasurably, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, you think of like How to Win Friends and Influence People, which was a book that had, you know, it just did so much for me. You think of a book like Peace, Power, and Plenty, which was written back in 1910 by Orison Swett Marden, who many consider to be the progenitor of the personal development movement. He was actually the founder of Success Magazine.
Oh, wow.
And back in the early 1900s. And, you know, it's a page, it talks about, you know, peace, which is inner peace, power, which is inner power, not power over others, power over ourselves, mastery of our own emotions, of our own, right? And then plenty, which is abundance. So it's just delicious gems. In fact, I couldn't even write in the book. I just took notes on the yellow stickies and so forth because it's a original version and so forth. But so, you know, that's certainly one of my favorite books of all time. But, you know, I read books on different topics and just enjoy many of them so much. And I learn from so many of them.
Excellent. And what's your favorite food?
God, you're asking good questions, but they're tough ones for me to, you know, be able to answer. Let's see. I'm trying to think, what would it be? Right now I've got these vegan burgers that I'm into, that I'm having like about twice or three times a day. And I'm loving those a lot. So I'm going to say, the vegetarian or vegan hamburgers. It's like my junk food that's actually healthy and not hurting any, you know, formerly living thing.
Excellent. They sound great. And the final one, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, Mac the Knife.
Oh, great choice. Oh,
absolutely.
Love it. Classic song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mac the Knife. He was amazing. Yep.
Yeah.
Shark bites with those teeth.
Well, thank you so much, Bob. I really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with me today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. This is great. Love the work you're doing and keep touching the lives of lots and lots of people with the exceptional value you provide.
Thank you. Well, speaking of value, did you get some value out of today's episode? I know I sure did. And I'm sure you did as well, listening to this. And if you did, make sure that you share it with a friend. Share it with someone who you think would benefit from listening to this episode. Also, if you haven't already, make sure that you join the Success in Mind Book Club, because April's book is going to be The Go-Giver. We meet virtually at the end of the month to talk about the book and share our ideas and our insights from the book, and to also talk about how we're going to take the principles of each book and put them into action. And The Go-Giver is an excellent book to do this with. So if you're interested in joining us and connecting with like-valued individuals, other entrepreneurs, it's a little bit of networking, and then a whole lot of talk about the book of the month. This is only the second month of it, and I think it's a great way for us to connect. So if you want to join that, the link for that will also be in the show notes. Thanks again for being here. I'll be back again on Thursday. Have an amazing week. Bye for now.